Good morning, my name is Keegan Rasko, and I'd like to introduce you to Life Downstream. Life Downstream is a radio show where I, an Astoria High School student, and my English teacher, Mr. Andrew Morgan, go around the community and ask interesting people about their experiences and how those experiences allowed them to learn outside the classroom. And with that, I'd like to pass it over to Mr. Morgan to introduce our guest today.
So we're here today with Henry Balancifer, the current mayor of Warrenton, a lifelong Warrenton resident. Before we get started, Henry, Mayor Balancifer, what do you prefer?
Just call me Henry. That'd be fine.
Okay. That sounds great. So, Henry, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
My pleasure.
I found it really interesting when we were chatting earlier about your perspective about language and how you see communication now that you've had this very public position for a couple of years. And I wondered if we could just start by diving into that. Tell me a little bit about how being mayor has influenced the way you see communication and just kind of sharing your opinion publicly. How has that kind of affected that?
Well, when I was a city commissioner, you're not speaking for the city unless you're delegated that responsibility. And so as a city commissioner, you're one of several. And I would say I probably had a bit more free hand in how I wanted to express myself and all that. And I think part of that too was that was my first role in elected life as well. So there's a little bit of getting used to that. It was very quickly apparent to me as soon as I became mayor. And it wasn't one of those things where, you know, you walk into the job, and I got put into the job basically because the mayor had resigned at the time. And the commission, there was a bit of a fight about even appointing me, the interim mayor, until the next election. And I would say that the role was something that I was ready for, in the sense that I've been up to speed on a lot of stuff. You know, the mayor was great to include me in a lot of things. But at the same time, I don't think anything ever prepares you for the role until you're in it. And so as soon as I got into the role, it was a quick realization that there was a gravity to this, to what I was doing, much more than even when I was a city commissioner. And it was just something that became apparent to me. So I was now speaking, I was now speaking for the city. Whether I wanted to say my personal opinion or not, really, if I'm saying in the public meeting, this is my opinion, there's a bit more, you just got to be more cognitive of what you're saying, because what you're saying is going to have influence both on the rest of the commissioners, but also how other people are thinking of the discussion. You're framing it almost.
And so would you say, you know, often that manifests itself in giving you pause, that mm-hmm. the way that kind of spins out in your life is that makes you slow down, that mm-hmm. that kind of makes it so that you can't just really quickly, you know, say whatever comes to mind on a certain issue?
Trust me, there's many things that I get fired up about, and even sometimes I'll write up something and then I stop and I think about it, or I sleep on it, and then I wake up the next day and I go, is that really something I need to be doing? Probably not.
Yeah. As an English teacher, this is really interesting for me because, you know, I work with students all the time who they get fired up about an issue. They really care passionately about something, and they feel like that passion or that energy justifies, you know, this immediate declaration about how they feel about it. Or and I think the way we speak about things, the way we write about things, so often it can benefit from, well, just sleep on it.
Yeah.
Look at it again tomorrow. You know, don't, you write a draft of something, you write a poem, you write lyrics. Don't just hit publish. Don't just hit send. Like, sleep on it. Think about it.
It's a really important trait to have, because words, whether we like to say it or not, have consequences. Mm. And I'm known for speaking my mind, which is a kind of an interesting thing. We're talking about restraint, and here I am saying, you know, a lot of people say that what they like about me is that, you know, I say it like it is. But the truth of the matter is that there's a lot more measurement in when I weigh in, how I weigh in, what I weigh in with. And I'm trying to always think of the lens of what is Warrenton's position on this, what should it be, and also, what does my commission think of it? Because if the other four members of the legislative body of Warrenton think completely different from me, I shouldn't even say it, unless I'm just saying it in a meeting of a discussion, you know, on the topic, in my opinion. Because I mean, there's a time where you need to take a stand, but I think what you're right in saying that a lot of people get worked up in energy, and there, I think a lot of people are encouraged to create a position to have an opinion, and
rather than read through, you know, the policy and dig through everything before, you know, kind of making a determination.
I read three histories on Wikipedia and a couple of things, and I saw a YouTube video on this, and I'm really outraged. And it's like, well, that's great, but there's a broader issue at play, possibly. And my biggest, you know, advice to that issue is just be intellectually curious and acknowledge that maybe you're not always right, and that it's okay not to have a position on some things until you can come to a decision time.
As somebody, you know, who is so involved in local politics, are you a little worried about the future in this regard? Because so many people are, with Twitter and social media, so many people are feeling more and more and more empowered to just put those opinions out there reflexively without much thought. Is that something that, you know, is going to make city council meetings harder and harder with each passing year? You know, we're going to have more opinions just being thrown out there, and less of that sort of measured social dialogue, social, you know, actual conversation.
I would say that, I mean, there's I get a lot of requests, or in many cases some constituents demand time of the commission. I want this being spoken about. I want this topic to discuss. You need to say something or do something about this. I mean, we're talking everything from the dogs that bark next door to fire hazards from plants growing to just you name it.
Issues.
Myriad of issues, minor, major, and some within the city's control, some not. And really, you need to just, I find that sometimes people just need to listen because they don't have an outlet for it. And sometimes also you just need, like you said, take a step back and kind of look at it. Oftentimes people sometimes will say something about, you know, well, this staff said this, or this report said this, and I feel, you know, I'm getting screwed. And then you look in the record and, well, this and this happened. So sure, your side of the story sounds very tempting, and I'm on fire. I think this, you know, an injustice has happened. And then when you look into the actual primary source documents, the story can be a little bit more nuanced than that. Mm-hmm. And how did we get there? Why is important? Mm. Why is, I think, very important when you're making any decision?
I
really didn't answer your question, I think. I'm sorry. I would probably cut that out. But
it's making me think of what you had mentioned earlier about listening, and about, you know, one of the markers of somebody who's in public service and doing it successfully and able to kind of stay relevant, you know, over a long career is adaptability. Mm-hmm. Could you talk a little bit about your perspective on that? You know, where did that come from? Why do you feel like, you know, the best politician is the person that can be flexible and is not necessarily the person who just kind of latches on to some sort of, you know, moral point for four decades? And tell me a little bit more about your perspective on that.
There's a time to be angry. There's a time to celebrate. You know, there's a time for everything. And particularly in politics, and when I mean politics, this includes church or your civic organization or the key club or the track team. There's a time for everything. Not everything, when you bring up the idea, is going to happen. There's always a time frame that window of opportunity where it actually can go through is going to happen. And so you got to know your timing as well. But just like you can have the right person for a political job, but it'd be the wrong time for them to run, and they'll fail, you know? So timing is really important, I think. You know, we elect leaders for the times we're in, and to provide both either the leadership, the strong leadership, or the soft leadership, depending on what we need. So the flexibility kind of comes from being able to understand understand your constituency, understand the struggles that they face, being able to communicate that, empathize with that, and I think just not getting, you can't disconnect from your voter, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. It's really easy sometimes when you have this balcony view of things to lose sight of the people aspect of it. Policy, that because we need to do X, or, you know, we have to act now. Well, it's all well and good to act now to do X, Y, or Z, but if that means that, you know, Joe the plumber is going to be on the streets. You have to look at the human element of that. And so with our nuisance cases, for example, the city had a lot of nuisance properties, properties with a lot of rubbish, really run down, a lot of cars that didn't work. And they were both lowering property values for the neighbors. They were causing vermin to, you know, infest areas. It has a host of issues. We have a lot of constituents who, because Warrenton for a long time never enforced the nuisance laws on its books, properties got out of hand. People hoarded stuff. People just let it pile up. And so when we went forward to do nuisance declarations, you know, there's a hammer you can, you know, use. Be like, you have to clean it up and you have 10 days. Do it now or we're coming in and we'll send you the bill. And if you don't pay the bill, we'll put a lien on your property. So there can be some pretty significant hammers that the government can use to compel people to fix things. But what we kind of decided is, hey, there are certain cases where people are just being stubborn. So, you know, you need to be firm with those people. And in some cases, it's just out of their physical capability to fix the problem. It's just gotten too out of hand. So how do we come alongside those people? And Commissioner Dyer, proud to serve with a guy like him, and all the commissioners, but he was like, you know, I can create citizen teams that can go out and help these people if they're willing to accept it, to move these cars out and get them scrap metal value and to haul out this junk. So the government is got a hammer to make the enforcement happen, but we're also coming alongside people that need that help to not forget there's a humanity, there is a neighborly aspect to helping people get to compliance. We can have the outcome, even if it takes a little longer, if we just help people along the way. Mm-hmm. You'd be tough with those that need it and compassionate to those who also need it. So,
would you say that's something that you've learned since becoming mayor, is that a lot of, when you look at a policy or you look at some issue that's affecting Warrenton, it sounds like something that you use as this sort of indicator for, all right, should we pursue this or should we run with this or not, is, will this be actionable?
Mm-hmm.
Will this be something where it either just allows people to kind of share their opinion about it, we can talk about this endlessly, or does this have direct actionable things that we can do with this? Do you feel like that's accurate?
Yeah, no, I agree. Back to your comment about, you know, people demand action now. The question really is the issue ripe? So do we have, you know, is the desired outcome you have, is there a fully fleshed out proposal? You want to see, if you want to see dysfunction at its best, give a legislative body a problem statement and a half-cooked idea and watch people debate it till they're blue in the face. But because that was the idea that was on the table, that's what people attack or support. When instead you really need to be thinking thoughtfully, run it. You know, I have kind of like a group of, depending on what the issue is, I have kind of a bunch of people that I kind of go to kind of be a sounding board, and they typically think differently than I do. And I use them to throw ideas out to figure out, okay, what's the other side of this coin? And by being able to do that, we can kind of craft and set the table for the discussion in a manner that'll be constructive and productive. And I've seen a lot of people say, oh, I need to have this, you know, and it's like, well, some of these issues, how much can the city really help you with? Or is this a state or a federal issue or a county issue? And if the idea is just some general, like, do something, it's kind of like, well, I could have that on the agenda for that. But if there's not a proposal, a staff report, a cost benefit analysis, if that requires one, you know, we're just going to be running in circles talking about it. And I really personally don't prefer to spend my time talking about things that don't, that aren't going to be productive, because everyone's a volunteer on that board. Their time is precious. The people in the public are, you know, their time going to the public, you know, meetings is precious. So, you know, let's make sure we're getting stuff done.
Keegan, were you going to chime in there?
Well, I was just wondering, we've talked a lot about Henry after being mayor, but what about Henry before the mayor? How did you get your foot in the door as far as gaining political experience? Because you obviously have a lot of...
It starts when I was 4. When I preached my first sermon thinking I was going to be a preacher, I was on community service of all things. And how that kind of came about is there was a group of, it was like a church group of teens from a Baptist church in like Washington that showed up on our doorstep out of nowhere saying, hey, we're just trying to show God's love. And you know, can we do something around your house to do some work? And I'm like, this is strange. But then they came in and cleaned like our toilets and all that, and they were happy to do it, and they thanked us for the opportunity and just moved on. And I was, it's kind of like, that was kind of nice, but like, why, you know? And then I started delving in a little bit and asking my parents, you know, I was really young, so I didn't understand a lot of the concepts going on, but about, you know, what is community service and what are people doing and why are they doing it? And of course, my parents used a local example. And so I was like, hey, this is something we should be doing. And a little known fact, my grandmother was mayor back in 1995 to 2000.
Oh, I didn't know
she was the, yeah. I believe she was the second female mayor in Warrington. The one before that was Claire Cynthia Munson way back in like 1903. But the Warrington Trails, it's really her legacy. Mm-hmm. And at the time, it was ridiculed as a soft woman's project, you know, recreation, like who, you know, whatever, you know. And it was really tough trying to get that through. But that was something she was determined about. And it had to do with dedicating Warrington's waterfronts as right-of-ways and preserving that for public access. Hmm. So I didn't really know what my grandma was doing as mayor. I just knew she was mayor back in the time when I was a kid. But later on in high school, I got introduced to Betsy Johnson through the fisheries project I was doing. And I got to see her connect dots. I had no clue how to... I said, I have a fish hatchery that needs to be built. You know, I'd like to get National Guard troops deployed or somebody help me build this thing. Because I can't afford to hire somebody to do it. And she helped me connect the dots and introduce me to the folks. And I get introduced both to the military aspect, which continues to be a strong presence in my life. And I keep a strong relationship with military as Warrington's, as mayor, and before that as a city commissioner. Which I think helped us get the F-15 flyover during last year's 4th of July parade. But, you know, the military is a great asset for more than just, you know, overseas deployment. It's really, the National Guard particularly is great for assisting community projects. And Warrington actually, I think, has more community civil engineering projects from the National Guard than any other city in the state. Hmm. I won't go into that rabbit hole so far, but basically exposure from... public speaking and opportunities to speak, and Senator Johnson. Some of these opportunities were things I requested, but it also required people willing to take the chance. The fisheries project would have never happened under any other teacher other than Steve Porter. Hmm. And I'm not doing that to berate my teachers at all. I had a very supportive and very understanding collective of teachers in my life. I logged 2,000 hours of community service before I graduated.
Wow.
Yeah. So
what were some of those early conversations?
That was a lot of missed class.
could you tell us a little bit about, you know, for those who don't know, so Henry started the Warrington High Fisheries, in 2005, to start this, it's a nonprofit, right?
Yeah.
To start this nonprofit.
Yeah.
How did that come about? Was it you going to your teacher? Was it your teacher coming to you? Did somebody say, hey, I have an idea, and there was this light bulb moment? Or?
No. My family has this habit of never telling their progeny anything really about what they did unless it ever gets asked. So I had no clue that my father was involved in the building of the fish hatchery flume that still stands today, which is the water reservoir we have back when the shop class was there. I had no clue. But that was kind of a cool piece of history I learned later. Hmm. I was raising pheasants in cages in facilities near the hatchery. The hatchery was run down. It was shut down at the time when I joined it, the program, and I got in kind of early. It was unusual that way. And so I noticed, I said, hey, what's this building? And I said, oh, it's the old fish hatchery. And I said, fish hatchery, what's that? Oh, you raise salmon. Oh, that's really cool. Because as a kid, I had great memories gill netting and also island fishing. And so I liked pheasants, but I also really liked fish. And so I said, what was it going to take to get it back going? Well, you know, the principal, budget cuts, da-da-da. Mm-hmm.
So, and you were a freshman at the time?
Well, I was a sophomore when I kicked the idea, but I was aware of it in freshman year. And first thing I did when we got a new principal my sophomore year, I took him down on a tour of my bird cages, and I knew he was going to ask about that facility, and he did. So what was this?
So the tour was with this in mind.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Come check out my bird cages.
Yeah. Okay. You know. So, you know, it was a little strategy there, and he was a great, you know, Rod Hines, great guy, and he goes, oh, what's this? And I said, oh, it's the hatchery. Oh, why isn't it running? Well, there's holes in the roof. There's, you know, like the eaves are falling off. It was considered dangerous, and then also, we didn't have any the pumps, the money to pay for the electricity to run the pumps. And he said, well, what are you going to take to get it going? I said, well, we can patch this up here and there with some simple stuff. And I just need your funding and okay to get the pumps running. He's like, really? And I said, yeah. He's like, do it. And I said, here we go. That project went for about 8 months before I realized it's not going to survive when I leave. So if we want to continue this program, we need to actually build a new facility. And that's when it got going. And actually, believe it or not, the first contributor to Warrenton High Fisheries Incorporated was a Catholic priest from Portland who used to be the parish priest at the Hammond affiliate of, I can't remember, Star of the Sea. I don't know what they call it. And he said, hey, back when I was the priest back in the 80s, there was kids that went through this program that it probably kept them alive because they were in a... They just didn't think they would make it through school, and having something to do with their hands and take care of animals and fish really made an impression. And he goes, I want to support that. And he gave us $650.
Wow.
Father Edward Allstock. And
if you're listening, thank you.
But
wow, that's amazing.
That's how it kicked off, you know. But my life is full of doors opening and going through those, and then doors closing and just going to the next one. And I've kind of always kind of kept an ethos of why not try it? You know, I believe you learn just as much from failure, if not more, than if you do from success. And, you know, when the door's closed, then okay, move on to the next one, unless it's something you really, really need to fight or believe in. But,
It's interesting to hear you talk about, you know, just the value in, hey, giving this a shot, just jump in, give it a try, I'm curious, you know, what do you think about the difference between trying to just learn how to do something versus jumping in and learning on the job, you know, learning through experience? How much of what you're doing now can you attribute to, well, this is really just for me giving this a shot and learning on the job, and or this ties back to the poli-sci classes I took in college and that prepped me for this.
Every personality is different. So I always caution, you know, people like, oh, how'd you do it and how can I copy that? It's like every person walks a different path. And I always encourage people, don't follow somebody else's. But, you know, chart your own, whether that's similar or not. But I would say that my work as a conflict resolutionist when I was in college really helped shape my ability to look at a problem from a little bit more detached viewpoint and be dispassionate about both sides of the story, and recognize the validity of viewpoints, even if factually they're wrong, but how somebody feels about them. And then trying to sift through the feelings to what is the core issues and trying to get people to have consensus around that. But, you know, I've always felt that education in my life wasn't a training. It didn't train me for much of really anything, to be honest with you. And that's not a diss. For me, I learned pretty much everything from doing, not knowing anything and jumping into it. I mean, I had no clue how to start a nonprofit or do that, you know, just start, you know. Necessity is the mother of all invention, right? You know? Mm-hmm. So when I went to school, my education at George Fox, Warrenton High School, most of that was either opportunities to actually practice or do something in real life that either my teachers afforded me or was a required assignment or something like that, or required, you know, apprenticeship or internship. Or education provided me the ability to understand either after the fact or while I'm in it, what is going on. That's why I think the real value is understanding and being able to wrap your head instead of just being in the thick of it. Mm. Because you can be in the thick of a lot of things, but if you don't understand what you're doing, you can get off track really quick and start like veering off in 6,000 paths, lose your way, and then find out, how did I get here? So there's a lot of value, I would say, to a liberal arts education. You know, there's a lot of different experiences I've had in life that have prepared me to where I am now and to the situations I have now. But those are situations that oftentimes were hardships, failures, or traumatic events in my life. And I wouldn't be the person I am today without them. So whether or not I caused a lot of hurt or I was hurt, I wouldn't trade them for the world, because that's who I am today. And part of that's also me embracing myself, I guess you could say, warts and all.
So, Henry, I know that one of the things that you look for when somebody comes to you with a proposal is, what is it going to take to get this done? And you know, we talked earlier in the show about, you know, actionable steps. And I know that for you, you had mentioned before the show when we were chatting that there's a lot of appeal in proposals that can be community driven and have like community momentum. And the government role is one where it's kind of helping oversee that, but there's a lot of community energy behind it. I don't know. Would you say that's,
you know, I'd like to say that there's a role for government in certain aspects. Oftentimes that involves infrastructure, or, you know, the basis of something, for example, trails for, you know, the city can build the trail. Now, whether or not there's funding to do anything with it, like hold events or fundraisers or put a lighting on it, you know, and sustain that cost, that's another thing that, you know, it's always easy to start and build something. It's really hard to sustain it. That's why buildings fall into disrepair. You can build a lot of them, fall into disrepair. So I feel that you got to look at every proposal different, but, you know, I think of the things like, just since this interview is happening in Astoria, let's talk about Astoria. You have the Historic Downtown Association. You know, they had the Main Street program. Mm-hmm. Those are things independent of the city. They're closely tied to the city because there's certain aspects that the city can help with policies. But the city's not one generally coming up with the ideas, pushing or advocating it. They're in partnership with a community organization of interested individuals that are pushing something to better their town. And I feel that community engagement, ownership, and sustainment is better when individuals within the community take that for themselves, and that community can, and then the government can, you know, assist with that, so to speak. There's a lot of restrictions, federal and state, on government and its ability to quickly do anything. And so oftentimes things can happen a lot easier and better if a private entity can just push it forward. Mm-hmm. There's limits to that, obviously. But I think, for example, you know, if a business community goes, hey, you know, we need to drive revenue for this, so let's hold fundraisers. Let's have that marathon on the trail or whatever. And that can either help pay for more trails later or more activities or Parks and Rec stuff, so money to go to the Parks and Rec. Or that can go to whatever we're special thing we're doing to promote our businesses. And so, you know, my excitement with Warrenton having a Main Street program is it's community individuals where, and it all started, believe it or not, with people complaining about nuisance properties. And then it took 8 months. We finally did something about it. It started actually like, oh, maybe. And people said, hey, it looks nice finally, you know. So it started building on itself. And so, you know, then they're starting to pressure wash the streets and put planners out. Just minor things that build on itself. Hmm. And then people start taking ownership. Business owners go like, hey, actually, I'd like to, you know, I didn't think about it because it's always been business as usual to just have X, Y, or Z. And maybe I need to repaint this in a nicer color. And maybe I need to start taking the weeds out of my thing. And I always think that a town is stronger if, you know, government can sometimes provide a base level or an infrastructure build, but that the community really takes that for their own and builds on that.
As we wrap things up here, is there anything folks who are listening should be mindful of for the next couple weeks, things happening in Warrenton, anything people should have on their radar, summer events, things that are going on?
So, my State of the City address is coming up. That'll come up in July. Reason why I'm doing that is because the budget gets passed in June, and I don't like making speeches about things that don't happen if they're not funded.
Thank you so much for coming in and speaking with us today. Henry Ballensiefer, thanks so much.
Thank you.
So this is the segment of the show where I offer my student perspective on the speaker today. And Henry's story is so important because it reminds us that leadership is by no means an easy task. And this leader's perspective on leadership not only helps to develop our community's relationship with our leaders, but it also helps to develop the skills and the attributes of our next generation of leaders. And that is quite possibly one of the most important goals that a person like Henry can ever hope to tackle.